Good morning. It is now 25 minutes after 8. Thanks for tuning into your community radio station, KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak, and as you've been hearing, we are in the midst of our fall fundraising drive, starting off on day 2. Our total right now, $18,205. And I'm sure you heard the two little announcements there. If you call in and make your pledge or text your pledge or go online to pledge, and if it's $120 or more, Madison will add $100 to that. Also right now, and there's just one left, one of those IFA round trip package for two and a vehicle up to 20 feet, for a, is that $500? I don't have my glasses on, for a $500 pledge. So, again, if you'd like to take advantage of that, I believe that's like a $400 value, give us a call or drop on by. And this entire month, the month of September, is National Preparedness Month. And this week, the final week, encourages people to stay involved in their preparedness and also being part of something bigger. And part of that is volunteering to help within your community. We have several groups represented today here joining us from the Salvation Army. We have Leah Fowler from the Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT, Jay Henry, and from the North Tongass Volunteer Fire Department and the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad, Jerry Kiefer. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the other thing, I did invite a couple other groups or tried to reach out to a couple other groups, and I know that the South Tongass Volunteer Fire Department is also recruiting, and I was unable to contact them, but they are another organization I know out there. And also Red Cross is looking for some help, too. So we will put that information with this report on our website, krbd.org, contact information if you're interested in getting involved. And let's start off with you, Jay Henry, and tell people what CERT is and what it does.
Sure. Well, CERT stands for Community Emergency Response Team. It was established in 1993, and the idea for CERT, the original idea, started in the late 80s. The Los Angeles Fire Department put it together, and the concept was to train volunteers to assist professional first responders in the event of a large disaster. Our CERT team, I believe, was established in 2012, was the first class for our local Ketchikan CERT team. And how we use CERT, in addition to the training, is for community outreach and event support.
And I had heard, I spoke with the fire chief, City of Ketchikan Fire Chief Abner Hoag, and he had mentioned something about the idea of CERT, maybe you're having upcoming trainings and things, but perhaps making it something that, what do you want to say, that people can learn to take care of themselves. It's not necessarily fully to take care of your neighborhood, but also a big part of it is learning to take care of yourself. So if there is an emergency, you can be self-sufficient and know what to do and know who to contact and be helpful, but at the same time, focusing on you. Does that make sense? I'm sort of babbling. I apologize. But a lot of it is focusing on taking care of yourself and your family.
Exactly. Correct? And I think I know, Maria, exactly what you're talking about. Chief Hoag and Corey Padron, the Saxman of VPSO Saxman, we're working on having drop-in classes. And one of the biggest hurdles for, I think, getting people in the door to the CERT program is that to be CERT certified, it is a 9-week class, and each of those classes range from 4 to 6 hours. So it's a huge time commitment. So what they've proposed and what I really support is we're going to have 2-hour drop-ins, and that's going to be later in October. We haven't quite determined the day or the time yet. But what we'll do is we'll use the structure, the model of the CERT training, and then also add into regional specific things, winter preparedness, boater safety, hiker safety. And that's one of the goals, I think, that we're pushing towards, getting the information.
What are some of the things that CERT has helped with?
Oh, in the past, when we've had enough people, we've done traffic management for the Blueberry Festival. We've done shelter training, and I have never even seen the shelter myself set up, but I hear it's a good one. I think we could, if there was an event called a med surge, if there was an overflow at the hospital, we could have potentially 50 beds.
And something else that is coming up, and we spoke about that, I believe, last week, something that is coming up is the airport emergency event. And I believe they moved it to mid-October. I'll check that out. But that is another way people can volunteer. You can volunteer to be a victim to help out with that event. And also, as you mentioned, organizations such as CERT will potentially be participating in that. So again, as we get closer to those dates, we'll give you more information. Now I'm going to turn for a moment to Jerry Kiefer, and you have two hats in a sense. And maybe let's start with the North Tongass Volunteer Fire Department. And what type of volunteers are you looking for?
Well, we're always looking for volunteers. We're currently about finishing up our September recruitment drive. And we're accepting applications. Right now, our most critical volunteer that we're looking for is tanker operators and interior firefighters. But we have spots for ALS and BLS medical providers and support folks as well.
And do you already have to have training? Do you get training? How does all that work?
No, we'll provide all training in-house. We have a training program that runs year-round, and in October, we start our mandatory training, which takes care of our CPR and the stuff that we normally have to do for OSHA and for other regulatory requirements.
You mentioned the tanker operator. Does someone already have to have skills in that, or that's trained?
We can do all the training in-house. We do our own emergency vehicle operator course, which is... It can be done in a weekend. Primarily, it's a classroom portion followed up by a cone course type where the vehicles are driven successfully through a cone course and then a highway checkout drive where we go out and practice with the new recruits.
And you mentioned this is you're always looking for people year-round. Do you have quite a bit of turnover, or how does it go?
Well, we have a bit of turnover. Not actually... all that much, although we pull from a fairly small community out on the North End. We're kind of, over the last 10 years, we've been limited out at 20 to 25 volunteers. We'd certainly like to increase that, but we're pulling from a small group out on the North End.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, do you know anything about the needs of the other departments? Does the downtown station, for example, take volunteers? Is it just the North and South End?
Yeah, the city of Ketchikan has just finished up their recruitment, and I believe they got 6 or 8 this year for their recruit academy that will be started. South Tongass, the last I heard from South Tongass is they had already finished up their recruit drive, and I think they have 6 or 8 as well.
Okay, and what does it entail? You mentioned there's very different ways people can help. Are you looking for administrative help as well, or you already have that taken care of? You're looking more for actual... medical and firefighting?
Well, we're looking for for the most part, firefighters and EMTs, although there are spots for even as simple things as coming in and doing cleanup. To operate a department, especially a combination department where you have very limited paid staff, there's a ton of admin work that gets done by everybody. And the more people that we have, if you're just interested in coming in and doing, filing or data entry, that frees up somebody else to go out on the apparatus floor and take care of things that aren't getting taken care of. So we have spots open for everybody.
Okay, and let's now turn to Leah Fowler with the Salvation Army. And tell us a bit about your organization, what you do, and what type of help you're looking for.
So the Salvation Army has been in this region since 1922, serving Ketchikan, Saxman, and Metlakatla. And there's a number of other Salvation Armies that kind of scatter the southeast of Alaska. And so within Ketchikan, there's a number of different services that we provide. Primarily, I think people would be familiar with the soup kitchen, which its name is actually the Gateway Community Table. And the reason for that is because it's very much a community project. So we host it at the Salvation Army, and we have folks come in from different organizations, churches, businesses, individuals, families, and they cook a meal which then is served to anyone in the community who wants to come. There's no requirement for folks who come in for lunch. It's just available to anyone who'd like to come in. And so at the moment, we have about 3 days of the week covered by volunteers. So most groups or individuals will come in once a month, maybe twice a month, and they'll cover a particular day. And so we're looking for more folks who'd like to come in. It's a great thing to do. I know a lot of businesses, they allow a couple of hours for their employees to come on in and serve the community in that way. And then the other volunteer opportunity we provide is over at the thrift store. So the money that is raised at the thrift store, it goes entirely to supporting the programs for this community. And it's a fairly small space, and so we always need folks to come in and help sort and go through clothes, get it prepared to go out on the store floor. And so that's something that, you know, all the way from children to adults can participate in whenever they have the opportunity to.
Okay, Jerry Carver, we're going to go to your other hat, the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad. Tell us about that organization, what it does, and whether you're in need of more volunteers.
Well, absolutely. Our organization was started in 1948, and we provide primarily wilderness and maritime search and rescue services. All volunteer group, no paid staff, so volunteer, it operated by volunteers, and we're always looking for folks. Skill set for search and rescue volunteers is definitely different than fire service, and takes a bit more time to train in house. So, you know, we're looking for two groups of people. First group that have that already come with some sort of wilderness experience, and that can be just as simple as hiking. Or experience in other search and rescue groups, ski patrol, that sort of thing. Some folks that are comfortable being outdoors for extended periods of time. But also we have a fairly large command and control need as well. In order to get a team up on the mountain, it generally takes 6 or 8 to facilitate that. Everything from radio operators, people that simply run fuel and supplies back and forth, that sort of thing. So if your hiking days are over but you want to help out, we've got spots down in the command center as well.
And I imagine it can be some difficult terrain out there.
Almost every place we go seems to be the more difficult terrain. It's a rare event that we're not in difficult terrain.
Because probably it's people have gone off the trail or taken an unusual route or whatever it may be. And occasionally you'll have incidents that are on a trail, but an organized thing, but it's...
Generally, we have... most of the time when we have a victim that's on a trail, it's some sort of a medical emergency or an injury.
Right. Okay, this is actually a call-in show, so if you have questions, maybe about volunteering, about preparedness, how you can help, or other training available to you, anything that we can kind of get out there, give us a call, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. We are in our fall fundraising drive, so the phone answerer will probably ask you if you would like to give a pledge of financial support. And you can if you wish, or you can just say, I wish to call in. I'm calling in with a question or comment. And we do have a thank you. Thank you, Bernie Hendricks, who called in with his pledge of support. Right now we're at $18,355. And a reminder, Madison Lumber and Hardware is adding $100 to pledges of $120. So keep that in mind. And I believe we still have that IFA round trip package, two people plus a vehicle up to 20 feet for a pledge of $500. We want to talk about actually national, it is National Preparedness Month, and we think about emergencies that happen. And I want to ask each of you with your respective groups, if there were a large emergency, what role does your organization play when those happen? And let's start with you, J. Henry. What is CERT's role? Should there be a, say, an earthquake or a flood or something and help is needed?
Well, there's a set of procedures and plans, and CERT would be used basically for logistical support. Our team right now, we have four members, so that kind of limits our ability to help. The way the CERT teams are structured is if we get information out into different pockets of neighborhoods, this would be the hope, is that those neighborhoods then would be able to take care of themselves first, their family, and then report back if there's still communications available from this disaster. And then that information would go through the chain of command, and we would basically react from that. We could be in sheltering operations. We could be in light search and rescue. It would depend greatly on the nature of the disaster.
So when you're talking about the neighborhood, is it a CERT member would potentially be a neighborhood contact? Is that what you mean by that, or what are you meaning?
Oh, sure. Let me try to clarify that. So my hope is that we have people that are interested in preparing throughout the whole island. And so depending on where the disaster affects us, if it was a island disaster, say, and North Tongass needed help, there would be pockets in South Saxman City, and then there would also be people in North that would be trained, and we'd be able to get information from them. That's the design for CERT, is the first responders are going to be so overwhelmed that if we had more trained community members to take care of themselves first, their family, and then look out to their neighborhood through the training that's free, that's provided. And this training is basically put in place to keep the volunteer responders safe. And that's one thing that we try to drive home, is how to safely do this.
Okay. All right. And Leah Fowler?
So the Salvation Army is, I guess, a hallmark is disaster response. So here in Ketchikan, if there was an immediate large-scale disaster, first of all, we would respond from a local level. So we have emergency food boxes, which are distributed throughout the week, you know, for families with their own emergencies, but that would be available if there was a large-scale issue as well. And then we would work alongside all of the first responders in seeing how we can fill holes. So often our response is in serving the first responders. So you'll find that if you see anything from down south where the hurricanes are, for example, there's a lot of the large EDS vans, emergency disaster service vans, and they're stocked up with food, water, basic necessities to help those who are responding to the disaster as well. And so we don't have one of those here in Ketchikan, being a smaller area, but there's one that we have access to in Juneau, and then there are also those in Washington. So if there was a disaster that here locally we didn't have the resources that we needed, we have the wider Alaska division that we can call upon. So we have support in Anchorage, so people can be sent down, people can be sent up from the south as well. And basically resources are pooled from within the Salvation Army to help other community groups. And you'll find that when a large-scale disaster does happen, the Salvation Army will not only be there for the initial cleanup and response to folks in that emergent time, but will stay and continue to be with people as the rebuilding continues. So that's happened throughout the country, throughout the last 150 years, really, where the Salvation Army is committed to staying and ensuring that people are back in a place where they can continue their lives, rebuild, and be restored. And then from a personal level as well, the Salvation Army is a church, and so we provide emotional and spiritual support, particularly if there are those disasters that kind of have a long-lasting emotional impact on folks. So that might be personal disasters on top of natural disasters. And so that's another kind of hat that we have.
You mentioned that there are these emergency supply emergency.
The EDS vans.
EDS vans. How long would it would just takes as long as it takes to get here? So it sounds like it potentially could be fairly quick.
Yeah. So it would, essentially take as long as the ferry takes. So all we need to do, if there would be a large-scale disaster like severe flooding or an earthquake, then we'd simply make a call to Anchorage and say, this is the need in the community. Is it available? So obviously, if other areas in southeast Alaska were affected, it might have to come from further away. But it's nice to have it kind of on call if we ever needed it.
Okay, and you serve Ketchikan, or do you also serve Prince of Wales Island, Metlakatla? Does it branch out?
Absolutely. So from here in Ketchikan, our areas of responsibility are Metlakatla, here on the entirety of the island. And then there's a Salvation Army in Klawok, which serves that area as well. Obviously, they're a little smaller, and so they would draw upon us as means of support, much as the other places do on the island as well.
Okay, and Jerry Kuiper?
Well, the fire department obviously is emergency response. So our emphasis would be the response to the incident itself. The majority of our personnel would be those first responders. We work within the community's disaster plan and would fill holes, not just inside our service area, but throughout the community. It's interesting that one of the things that always falls through the cracks with emergency response is how do we keep our emergency responders working in the field. And we have rehab services within our department, but they're very limited. We could do a 1 or 2 day operation and rehab our own personnel, but after a couple of days, our rehab capabilities are going to be exhausted.
And what do you exactly mean by that, of just letting people rest and get back in shape?
The rest, the food, the nourishment, water, giving them a break, and some longer term disasters, the emotional support that kind of comes with that. We can handle a couple of days of that, but after that, we're not going to be able to maintain. And with that, the families of the emergency responders. In any kind of a local disaster, the big real problem is we're asking our personnel to work very long hours, multiple days, but their house and their family has been affected as well. So going back to being able to take care of our families as well is really important.
Is that something that you're exploring, working on, trying to figure out means of maybe getting additional help in those areas, having a on-call volunteer list or something?
Well, we actually are currently looking at, we've got a committee actually looking at increasing our rehab capability. We will be very shortly coming to Salvation Army, the Red Cross, because they do that type of operation for some tips and hints in how we put our vehicle together and how we staff it.
And do any of you maybe know that? Is there a either a central organization, and maybe it is the Salvation Army would be the group to volunteer for things like that, of being available for emotional support or to help bring coffee or bring food or whatever? Is there a group that does that in an emergency?
I mean, so my husband and I, we've been here for the Salvation Army just for the last 3 months now. Oh. So we're kind of getting to know the community and reaching out and trying to link ourselves in, because that's very much what we hope to do. We have such a rich source of resources within town, and I think it's so important that we all kind of connect together. And so that's been something that we've tried to do, to say, look, we're here, this is what we can do, call us if you need us. And so that goes for individuals at a moment in need all the way through to organizations. And so it's wonderful to have an opportunity like this to say, the Salvation Army is here to help whomever needs it in whatever capacity, and just give us a call and and we'll do our best.
Okay, and again, this is a call-in show. If you have questions or comments, we really only have a few minutes left in the show. So if you do have a question or a comment, give us a call now, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Do either of you have thoughts on that? Or
as far as who would do rehab for our community specifically?
Or just maybe other support that groups that maybe help in some supportive way if there is an emergency and the crews need some support, like whether it be, like I mentioned, you know, bringing coffee, visiting their families. I don't know. I mean, and that perhaps churches would get involved in that role.
Yeah,
hard to say.
faith-based, definitely. And I just think knowing in this community that in the event people of Ketchikan, the surrounding communities would come together, and I don't know that it has a face or a name.
And it is, I would just say that is true. This is an area and a community where people do come together when disaster happens, when things happen. Any thoughts about Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad when an emergency happens?
Well, we've Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad, we're tasked through the Community Disaster Plan is to providing communications. We have a fairly extensive communication, mobile communication suite that we will be rolling down to the Emergency Operations Center in any kind of a larger disaster. That vehicle will be used to provide satellite, telephone, video, and radio communications. It's pretty obvious that what's going to fall in Ketchikan the first part of an incident is going to be a communication system. And that van is designed to come in and lay out a communications to replace the communication system that was in existence.
Okay. And they also point out there is a community plan, an area plan that falls into action. So if there was a large scale emergency, there is an order, a chain of command of how things happen. And amongst that, the radio station are involved in that as well. KRBD has backup generators, so if there's power outage, we would be on the air. And we also have something called Radio in a Box, which is a mobile radio station. So if for some reason we needed to set up the station elsewhere or this station went out, we do have this portable station that can go around to help with communications as well. And the discussion has been if there was this huge emergency, then that would kind of be used as a command center in a sense, where they can get emergency responders can get the emergency messages out there to the community. So there are a lot of things actually in place and being worked on here as well, and be aware of that. Again, it is a National Emergency Preparedness Month, and it's an opportunity to get prepared. I hope people have picked up some tips along the way and are starting to get your emergency kits together and things. And also, again, getting yourself involved and help in the community in whatever way you can, if you can and are interested. Does anyone have any, let's go around the room, just some final thoughts. If you have anything upcoming you want to mention or any other ideas of ways people can get involved. And Jay Henry with CERT.
Ready.gov is a great place to go for extra information. And if you go to the tab for this month, it's National Preparedness Month, and they're pushing disasters don't plan ahead, but you can.
Okay. Leah?
Like I mentioned before, as well as large-scale emergencies, we serve families and individuals who have personal emergencies on a day-to-day basis. And lately that has been in the form of emergency food boxes. Families who work hard but find themselves in a position where they can't afford everything. And at the moment our food pantry is pretty dry. So if, we take volunteers of time as well as volunteers of non-perishable food items. So if anyone has those that they'd like to donate, we would warmly welcome them to get it out to the community.
Okay. Are there certain hours where people can drop food off?
Any time between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. There's someone down at 342 Stedman.
Okay, great. Thanks. And Jerry Kiefer.
Yeah, and truly in disaster, it truly is all about attitude. Be prepared and don't forget that we live in Ketchikan because we're here so we can help our neighbors. You know, just keep that in mind in any kind of a disaster.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for being here this morning. And again, we will post contact information for each of these organizations if you would like to get involved.